Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Once again, thank you to everybody who got in touch with me over the last show, about the last show, and some positive comments, some negative comments. The last show was, of course, about trophy hunting, and some people mentioned an article that appeared from somebody who had grown up in Zimbabwe and suffered from this trophy hunting. Was about some son of a bitch dentist, some millionaire, multimillionaire dentist named Dr. Walter Palmer, who had killed a lion in a protected area. And everybody got pretty outraged by it. It sort of set off a whole reaction in me, and I was talking about that and trophy hunting and hunting in general. And a lot of people pointed out to me that, not a lot of people, but a few people pointed out to me that there had also been an article very recently about this killing of this lion, an op-ed piece by somebody in the New York Times, a Zimbabwean man who was studying in the United States, who grew up in a village in Zimbabwe. And he said in Zimbabwe, he couldn't understand Americans being so concerned about lions, because in Zimbabwe, most people hate lions. Lions are dangerous. And he didn't care how famous this lion was. He didn't care who killed it, whether it was poachers, trophy hunters, or if a safe fell on its head, or God struck it dead with lightning. Good, it was his attitude. And he wrote exactly why it was a good thing. And it made a lot of sense, and it was very passionate. Question of life or death. So It's a big world, room for many different opinions. But that's what I appreciate about people getting in touch with me, because they point out these things that I would miss, or I can't read everything, or I don't, you know, take everything in. And it helps me feel more balanced about things and get a different point of view. So if you hear something on the show that you like or you want to add to or you agree with, I would love it if you got in touch with me. And the way to do that is to go to FederFiles, FederFiles.com, FederFiles.com. And, oh, you know what? I forgot to take my water out. Hold on a second. Okay, got my water here. Got my mojo working now. Hold on. Okay, lucky to have water, right? Many places in the world don't even have any water, so I'm grateful for that. They say confession. They say confession is good for the soul. And that, I have no doubt that's true. But like everything else in the world, every single other thing in the world, there's two parts to it. There's a duality, right? And it's not an illusion. It's a real duality. Confession is good for the soul and good for the psyche and good for everything if you receive forgiveness. If you confess something and you are forgiven, that's the other part. So I'll confess something here today, but it would be nice if people wrote in and forgave me for what I'm about to confess. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Forgive me, listeners, for I have sinned. Like many of you may have, I watched the Fox debate the other day. Ordinarily, I might find better things to do with my life. Although these days I have a little less to do than I used to. But I watched the debate. And why did I watch the debate? Well, probably for the same reason that apparently 24 million other people watched. This is the Republican debate, by the way, the Republican presidential primary debate to find out who is going to ultimately be the candidate for the Republicans in the next election, who will go up against probably Hillary Clinton, unless there's a miracle. Well, maybe not necessarily a miracle, but maybe people get sick to death of the Clintons and everything that they represent in the Democratic Party and the rich and the warmongering and everything, and go to Bernie Sanders. Bernie is drumming up huge crowds, apparently. I was reading something in the paper this morning that here's a guy originally from Brooklyn or something like that, Jewish guy, who is a senator from Vermont. With what a lot of people would consider extreme, you know, left attitudes, but they're not at all. They're just the most humane, decent attitudes. Out there talking about how billionaires are screwing up the entire world and our own economy. And he's getting huge crowds in Iowa, right? So there's hope. It doesn't necessarily have to be Hillary Clinton, but it may very well be. So I watched the debate, and I wouldn't have watched the Republican debate for any reason, except that Donald Trump was going to be up there for the first time, along with everybody else. Donald Trump has been, him and his bad boy tactics have been entertaining people and offending people and provoking people for a while now. I think didn't he do this a couple of times before when there was a Republican primary season that he said he was considering running for president, then he didn't, or maybe one time he announced, I don't know, but maybe this is the first time he actually announced he was running for president. And I wanted to see him, and I wanted to see how people would, his compatriots, his colleagues up on the stage would react to him, and the audience and everybody else. And it's a morbid fascination, and I have to confess that I tuned in. My wife was watching, and my daughter wanted to see it, too. She was in visiting from the West Coast, where she lives, in the Northwest Coast of this wonderful country that we live in. So Donald Trump was up there, and for the Republican primary debate hosted by Fox, I guess members of Fox News, Chris Wallace and Megyn Kelly and some other man whose name I don't remember, but they are the primary stars on Fox News. Chris Wallace. And so they call it a debate, but it wasn't really a debate. I mean, are there really any presidential debates anymore, even when they have the two candidates finally and they have the actual presidential nominees going at each other, the Republican and Democrat? It's not really a debate. It's just kind of how fast and how well can you make a point or score a point, like a game, in the couple of minutes that you have. And in this case, it was 1 minute. They were asked questions by the moderators from Fox News, and they had 1 minute to respond. And I forget, if somebody challenged them or they were responding to somebody up on the stage, they had 30 seconds, which, of course, is absurd. There's you got people up there who are running for one of the most important jobs in the world, if not the most important job in the world, or it used to be anyhow. One of the most important jobs in the world that involves life or death in many ways for, you know, billions of people, or could involve life or death, and has to do with the most profound things that people struggle with in society and politics and culture. And to have 1 minute to answer some deep, wide question about what they would do about war or poverty or immigration or energy, it's absurd. It's stupid. To use a word Donald Trump is fond of, it's stupid. But it's the modern world. It's the modern world. And after a minute, if they went longer than a minute, a buzzer went off, like a game show buzzer, like, like on, I don't know, do they have that? I don't watch game shows, like Price is Right or Jeopardy. Sorry, you took too long. You took 61 seconds to answer a question about whether you would use, and under what conditions you would use nuclear weapons, or how you would solve the complex and serious energy problem that that everybody suffers from. Everybody needs energy, probably don't need as much energy in this country as we do use, or most of us don't. But how would you solve that, considering the fact that the planet is dying from, the poisoning from using fossil fuels? And what is your alternative suggestion? You have 1 minute, and the buzzer will go off if you go longer. So it's not exactly a debate. And Fox News is into sensationalism, as everybody knows. So they put Trump up in the middle, which is good staging. Fox News knows how to put on a show, because essentially, I've seen Fox News a few times, they are much more interested in entertainment than they are in actual news, which is the drift of things. That's the way things have gone for the last couple of decades, and CNN and all these other places that used to be a much more serious place are now into graphics and fighting and, arguing over small points and, insulting each other and insulting the audience or whatever it is that they do. It's all entertainment. It's all sensationalism. So they know what they're doing. They've been doing this for a while at Fox News, and they have very successful ratings. They put Trump up in the middle of the candidates, surrounded by some less interesting candidates. And the moderator, the one in the middle, was Megyn Kelly, who is this, I guess, dyed blonde kind of bombshell, but she's smart enough anyhow. And she seems to be pretty well informed. And she had all the research people at Fox News helping her out. So she had all kinds of interesting questions to ask. And she went after all of them, but especially went after Trump. And what is interesting to me is all these people up there, one of them could conceivably be president. They probably won't beat, because of their attitudes are so extreme. And the American public is changing. In many ways, most of the American public are younger. There are various demographic groups. Bottom line is most people are becoming more liberal in this country and more broad-minded and more tolerant, even though you read about a lot of intolerance. And I think most of those voters and most of those people are huddling together, have circled the wagons in the Republican Party. And that's their prerogative. And there is a lot to be afraid of. From change and from what's going on in this country. But so they put Megyn Kelly, and I noticed that the people who are they're talking to, all of whom, one of whom I should say, may turn out to be president. It's possible that one of these people could be president. And then there are governors, ex-governors, you know, senators and people who have normally might be deserving of some respect, and like I say, one of whom might actually be the president one day. It's conceivable. But what I liked, what was interesting is, and this is interesting because this is what people say about Donald Trump, is he's refreshing because he says what he means, and he's not afraid to be politically incorrect, and he's not afraid to be impolite. Well, we'll get to that in a little while. I mean, those are simplistic statements. Some of it is true, some of it is not true, and some of it is kind of complex. But what interested me about the Fox News people was, and I've seen many presidential primary debates on the other side before. I've seen them conducted by other networks, conducted of the Democrats, conducted of the presidential actual nominees, you know, the big debates that happen ultimately. I guess it would be the fall after this fall. People start running 2 years before. They're less polite. The people at Fox News were very aggressive and less polite. If somebody said something that was just bullshit, they would point it out. They would actually point it out. They would say, but that's not what you said, you know, here, right here, you said, and they were very, you know, very, like, for instance, the primary example, if you saw this, was, and I know some of you saw it, if you saw this, was Megyn Kelly telling, looking straight at Donald Trump and not looking away from him, not being, saying, excuse me, I'm sorry to have to ask you this, not qualifying it, saying, many people think that your statements about women are misogynistic and sexist. And for instance, you said, and whatever it was that Trump said, some outrageous thing, women are pigs, they should be down on their knees, or whatever incredible thing that he said. And, you know, he said, well, I, you know, I don't know if I said that, or maybe I said that, or there's no time to be politically correct. She says, politically correct? We're talking about insulting, you know, tens of millions of potential voters and women in general. And she was really, I like this. I like this because in general, the press these days, and for decades now, I think a lot of this, I remember a lot of this started in 1991 when the press was covering the war in Iraq. And they were allowed nowhere near, absolutely nowhere near, not just the front lines, but nowhere near, like, what, 100 miles of the front lines. They were fed the news by General Norman Schwarzkopf during 1991, Operation whatever it is, Line in the Sand, or, you know, Free the Oil for Billionaires, whatever name they gave this war. And it was the first time that anybody had ever really noticed in this country, and a lot of people complained in the media, but they didn't complain loud enough because They were already like being, you know, tamed like little puppy dogs by the government. The press is generally speaking much too polite, much too polite. They have forgotten their role in the world. They have forgotten their role in the world. And it wasn't always that way. Interviewers were, you know, often polite and respectful to an elected official, especially a higher up they went, senators. Mayors, senators, governors, especially, and especially presidential candidates, especially presidents. But now it's all ultra polite, and the press is completely cowed and tame. And it was interesting, because I don't watch Fox News that much, to see these people go after these people, to see them catch them up on lies and misstatements and contradictions, and, you know, come back at them. You never really see that much anymore, and that was refreshing. People say that Donald Trump is refreshing because he says what he means, but it was refreshing to see these people act that way in the press. Of course, it started right out. Now, Bernie Sanders speaks his mind, and why is he not more popular with the media? I don't know. Why is he not interviewed on a higher level? Often he is, but often he isn't. However, I noticed that he's much more popular all over the country than he used to be, much more popular. And if he's popular in Iowa, a guy like this from Brooklyn with a very, you know, discernible Brooklyn, New York accent, clearly Jewish, out there in Iowa, from Vermont, out there in Iowa, extremely liberal. But he's saying what people want to hear. A lot of Trump people say Trump is saying what people want to hear. Well, not what everybody wants to hear. But so Bernie Sanders is saying what people want to hear, too. That billionaires are screwing the country and all of the people who are, you know, all the people, most of the voters. Anyhow, it's, so the debate starts off that Trump wouldn't raise his hand. He was asked a question by one of the moderators. Before we start, gentlemen, no women up there, you know. I felt that this was kind of a, I missed the old crew, Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum. I thought they were more interesting, but maybe that's because I've just lost my interest in politics kind of over the years since 2012. My interest in politics has waned considerably on both sides. But I like that old group that there's and then I like Rand Paul's father, Ron Paul. I like him a little better than Rand Paul. But Rand Paul has enough feistiness and strangeness to qualify. Anyhow, he wouldn't raise his hand. They were asked, anybody up here on this platform, raise your hand if you're not ultimately going to swear, that you won't swear in advance, that you won't pledge in advance to support whoever the ultimate actual nominee of the Republican Party is. That's Paul on negatives. And, of course, no one is going to say that they're not going to support the ultimate. That, you know, it's collegial. I mean, they're in the party. They're in the Republican Party, except for Trump. So Trump raised his hand. And wouldn't Fox News have been disappointed? I don't think people were too shocked. But it seemed like a lot of the guys up on the stage were shocked. It was strange. But Fox News obviously wasn't surprised that he did that. Maybe they were a little surprised, but not very surprised. I think they would have been upset if he didn't raise his hand, because that's what they're counting on. That's why they put him in the middle. He is the star attraction. He's the show. So people say, what about Donald Trump? People say, yeah, he speaks. We like him. We support him because he speaks his mind. He's honest. I don't know if he's honest, but he speaks his mind. He says what's on his mind. Well, so do lunatics raving in the streets. So do performance artists. So do sometimes people who are accused of horrible crimes go into court and start screaming and speaking their minds. Just speaking your mind isn't necessarily a good thing or a qualification for leadership or something to be admired. However, since most politicians are exactly the opposite, since they're polished and deceitful and will say what anybody wants to hear or needs to hear in any given time, since they have advisors to tell them what to say, since they do polls before they open their mouths, since they all have speech writers, it is kind of refreshing to hear Donald Trump say, what's on his mind. The trouble with what's on his mind is it's often... his mind changes a lot. I don't know how many Donald Trumps there are in there. I mean, one day he'll say something, next day he'll say something else. One year he'll say something, the next year he'll say something else. I suppose there are some policies that Donald Trump has stayed steady on for a long time. And these are things that are popular with a lot of Americans. Just for instance, one of them, of course, is immigration, all of which everybody is struggling with in one way or another. Illegal, specifically illegal immigration, people coming in from Mexico who are not mostly Mexicans, but it turns out mostly from Central American countries like Guatemala and other places, but some Mexicans too. But just because you speak your mind doesn't necessarily mean you're qualified to do anything but speak your mind. There's a guy up, there's a couple of people up where I live on Broadway on the Upper West Side in Manhattan who have been around for decades, and they yell and scream on the street. One of them holds up a Bible and says, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus loves us, Jesus loves us. And that's all he ever says. He speaks his mind. He says, I love Jesus. You know, whatever's on his mind, it's not a whole lot, but he speaks it. Other people, there's a guy who's in Riverside Park who walks along talking as loud as he can to himself. He's not actually talking these days. It's strange. Used to be, if you heard somebody talking on the street out loud, they were somebody you might avoid or somebody who might be, you know, afflicted mentally. But now it's unusual if somebody is talking out loud on the street that they aren't talking to someone else on one of those wires hanging off their nose or their ears or into a cell phone or something. But talking out loud, you know, into some microphone, it's the unusual person who's quote unquote crazy who's talking out loud. So Donald Trump speaks his mind. He's talking about Mexicans coming in here, Mexican immigrants, illegals. We have to build a gigantic wall with, I think, machine gun towers or barbed wire or whatever it was, or nuclear weapons to keep them out, whatever he said. Mexico is sending us the Mexican government, or Mexico is sending us all their rapists and murderers and drug dealers. Well, that may be true. I don't know if the Mexican government is sending them, but certainly some rapists and murderers and drug dealers are coming from, you know, south of the border. But we got plenty of homegrown rapists, murderers, and drug dealers. I think we got plenty here. But apparently, a lot of people feel that way, and it's not just the Mexicans. I mean, he's also said a few things, and he has his attitudes about Muslims too. So a lot of people in this country, people who are conservative, and people who are about 99% white, middle class, mostly Christian, and not necessarily Christian, but most people. Lower middle class, have these attitudes, especially if they're competing for jobs. A lot of these fears are real. A lot of these fears are real. A lot of immigrants come to this country. They're illegal immigrants. And the American economy is not what it used to be, and the infrastructure. They are, there's just so many schools and hospitals and services and jobs to go around. And a lot of the people who are coming from illegal immigrants who come here for complex, important reasons, because a lot of them aren't criminals. A lot of them are just starving to death or living in vicious, oppressive, murderous, dictatorships, or they're starving to death. There's literally nothing for them to eat and there's no jobs for them. So they come to this country in the hopes of a freer, better life where they can survive and make some money and maybe feed their families. But it's competition. This has been going on in this country for a long, long time. However, now things are different. Now the population is much bigger than it used to be when we had, for instance, if you ever seen the movie Gangs of New York, did you ever see Gangs of New York? That's a perfect example of this kind of nativist fear of the Irish immigrants who were pouring in the 1840s and 50s because of British behavior towards them and the potato famine in Ireland. Millions and millions of Irish, dirt poor, and in many cases completely ignorant Irish immigrants came to this country because they were being treated with vicious violence and contempt, and they were being starved by the British, and there was a famine over there, and they were just dying. In the streets, dying in their houses over there. They had nothing to eat. So they came to this country for religious freedom. They came here like a lot of other people came here originally. They came here to try to find jobs, to get something to eat, to live, to survive. And they were met, and this is shown very well in Gangs of New York, the movie, by nativist crowds, by Americans who were who hated them for every reason, because they were Catholics, because they were different, because some of them spoke Gaelic, because they spoke with an accent, because they weren't Americans, because they were foreigners, they were aliens, and even though they were, most of them were legal immigrants, they were competing for jobs. A lot of these fears are based on reality now. A lot of these fears are based on reality. There's a lot of people out of work here. There's very few jobs that pay enough for Americans to, native-born Americans, people who grew up here, whose descendants grew up here, ancestors, I should say, grew up here. They are afraid of these people. They blame these people. They take it out on them. Who they should take it out on, of course, is billionaires like Donald Trump. The income inequality in this country is outrageous, and this is one of the main reasons why there is there's no tax. There's practically not enough tax on the rich. I shouldn't say no tax, but the tax on the rich and the very rich, is much lower than it's ever been before over the last 50 or 60 years or 70 years. I forget whatever it was. It's lower now than it's been since World War II. During Eisenhower, the tax on, over a certain amount of money, if you were rich, was as much as 90% over whatever it was, $1 million or something like that. And it's steadily gone downward under some Republican and even some Democratic presidents. And even our current Democratic president has never really done very much about it. And corporations get away without paying billions and billions and billions of dollars in tax that they owe to the government, and people hide, and rich people hide money all over the place. Is Trump paying all his taxes? I doubt it. His estimated worth, which is a funny word, I don't know, what is Donald Trump worth? I don't know what he's worth, but his estimated the estimated amount of money he has in assets and cash or whatever is $2-something billion. And he is, you know, one of the reasons why this income inequality, why so many people have so little, because a few people have so much. It's concentrated in the hands of a few people who have tremendous power, especially nowadays, have tremendous power over the political system. I mean, huge power over the political system. Anyhow, Trump's behavior, he says a lot of things about immigrants, and he talks about using, and you know, some of this stuff, you know, he's not stupid, went to the Wharton School of Business. And by the way, nobody up on that stage, well, hardly anybody, I should say, I would call, you know, dim or stupid. A lot of them are very smart. People like Ted Cruz, you don't get much smarter than that. I mean, went to Harvard Law School and was the chief clerk to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, William Rehnquist. You don't get that from a legacy. He didn't get that from a legacy thing like the Bush, like the Bushes do. I mean, he, you know, he's smart, and a lot of those people up there are smart. But sometimes I wonder about Jeb Bush a little bit. Jeb Bush, I can't say, you know, there's no point saying any people is, nobody up there is stupid. Some of them are extremely smart. Some of them are just plain smart. Look at this guy Carson, who was or is the chief of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. Just talk about brilliant or smart. But and Rubio and a couple of the other ones, maybe Huckabee, maybe Huckabee's no genius. But Trump, he's up there. So he, you know, he's up there and he's saying things that other people, a lot of people want to hear. And he's talking about tariffs. A lot of cheap products flood this country and put people out of jobs because people, American manufacturers and people that they hire, the workers, cannot compete with the cheap junk that comes in from other places, specifically a lot of it from Mexico and some, and a lot of it, most of it from China. And Trump would have huge tariffs, taxes on these products coming in here so that people in this country could compete. And that's a popular thing. So there's issues that he speaks his mind on, and there are millions of people who agree with him. And it's not just conservatives. We're not. I'm not just some knee-jerk liberal who says it's all, yeah, it's all the white hicks, it's all the fundamentalist Christians and all the rednecks and everybody else and all the, you know, all the the blue-collar jerks, you know, who are on Trump's side, all the people who are bigots and everything else. Yeah, there's a lot of people who are bigots who are on Trump's side, and Trump is, despite the fact that he's quote-unquote speaking his mind, he doesn't escape being a bigot, a racist, and a sexist. He can do that, too. He includes all of it. But he is speaking for a lot of people. but, of course, what's appealing about him is that he's not like a regular politician. And you could see some of that in the people up on stage there. But they're just trying to, you know, some of them are trying to, John Kasich, is it Kasich? Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Some of them told their personal stories, but others are trying to talk about the issues. Donald Trump is not interested in the issues. He goes out of his way to make sure that people understand that he doesn't have anybody even working on policy and issues. He doesn't have a research group. He doesn't have, you know, pollsters or anything like that. He just says what he feels like saying because he saves a lot of money on his campaign, that's for sure. But he just says what he feels like, and a lot of it sometimes has no connection to the reality of things, and a lot of it is right on. A lot of it is right on. Donald Trump appeals to people because sometimes he says, because most of the time he'll say what he means. If it's sexist or racist or insulting or vulgar, it's awful, right? And it often is because the man is that way. But sometimes he says things that no politician will say. Politicians are very careful these days, haven't they always been? But generally speaking these days, not to offend almost any group. And Donald Trump will say what he likes and not worry about offending people. He doesn't care who he offends. And there is something that has to be, it's like Fox News. There's something that's refreshing about that. He doesn't rehearse things. He doesn't vet things. And in an age when, like, for instance, the political conventions, if you watch political conventions, they are merely well-produced Hollywood or, New York stage kind of spectaculars. There is almost no difference between, and they hire the same kind of, they have the same production values, and everybody is completely rehearsed. You already know who's going to be president, who's going to be the nominee by the time they show up. There are no convention fights, no floor fights. If you are old enough, and I'm reading a book now called Advise and Consent. Remember that old movie and that book, Advise and Consent? It was written in the late 50s and early 60s. And published in, I think, 1959 or 1960, rather. And time for a little water here. And so Trump says what he means. But and that's good because a lot of people, it's good in one way. It is refreshing. I'm not saying it's good. It's refreshing because now, like political conventions and press conferences that people give, especially with presidents and people who are higher up, everybody has to be very quiet. Everybody has to wait their turn. They're picked on or they're not picked on. They don't get follow-up. They don't get to ask follow-up questions. And they're never allowed to be aggressive. God forbid that a reporter would be, or a news person would be aggressive with a presidential nominee or even a gubernatorial or senatorial nominee. Or let alone a senator, or especially a president. Everything, and especially the conventions, are all prepackaged, super polished, produced shows. And they're boring that way. They're absolutely boring that way. It used to be, once upon a time, that there were floor fights on the convention. I mean, sometimes literally fights, but you didn't really know. People would go into the conventions in the 40s and 50s and even the 60s, if you watch these things on TV, and you would see people making bargains and deals you didn't know, and people would scream and yell, and there were cross shouting, and people were raising their hands and arguing with each other, and people were huddling together, and behind the scenes stuff, so the smoke-filled rooms, people were making deals, and people would get on a stage and support somebody and then change something, and it was extraordinary. It was some of the most riveting, fascinating stuff, because it was about the machinery and how our government works and who was going to be in charge of our government. And you could see it right in front of you. You could see it right in front of you. Well, that would never happen anymore. Everything that every candidate says has been written by a professional press person or a media person. Every convention, everything, even the debates, the audience is told to shut their mouths. It always bothers me, right? If you approve of something, we understand that the audience, it's all contemptuous and condescending. If you approve of something that, if you disapprove or approve of something one of our participants on stage is saying, please, we respect we have very little time, respect everybody else, just be quiet. Just shut your mouths and be good little voters and be good little lambs and go to the slaughter when we tell you. I mean, the way people are treated these days, and they put up with it. People put up with it. But that's one reason why a lot of people like Trump, and I guess a lot of people like Fox News, because they can be outrageous. They may be full of shit. They may be bigoted and racist. They may get facts wrong, but it doesn't matter. It's a break from the usual over-polished, over-produced stuff that you usually get. Well, so I was looking at these guys up on the stage, and I was thinking, Would I vote for one? Well, no, of course I'm not going to vote for one of them as president. I mean, their attitudes about abortion and about about war and weapons and negotiating with other people, the idea of compromise, their attitudes are so extreme and so anti-woman and anti-immigrant entirely that except for one guy, anti-gay. Except that one guy who looked like he belonged up with the Democrats. He should actually be a Democrat, is Kasich. Kasich was the one guy who said things that seemed to be decent, humane, and liberal. The other ones, they're willing to let women die from abortion, die from not getting an abortion, even under if they were victims of incest or rape, or having a baby would result in their deaths. That's the way it has to be. That's the way it has to be. I mean, who's ever going to vote for somebody like that? And nobody I know. I mean, millions of people will vote for them, but I wouldn't. And I was thinking, which one of these guys could I imagine being president? Well, I don't really know. I mean, one of them hopes they'll be president, and who knows, it's possible that one of them could turn out to be president. I don't think that Bernie Sanders, if he doesn't get the nomination, he's probably unlikely to beat Hillary Clinton, or maybe if Joe Biden runs. But Bernie Sanders isn't going to split the vote and run on a separate party. I don't think he's going to do that. But who knows? Maybe he will. He is a socialist from Vermont. I don't think he's in the Democratic. I don't think he, you know, runs on the Democratic ticket. And he is elected from Vermont. Maybe he's on both at the same time. But if he split them, one of these guys turns out to be president, I don't know. But they all want to be president. I think we'll go to some music now. Take a break. Yes, 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 yes. Hail to the chief. The chief of what? The chief of what? It's kind of a rousing tune, isn't it? So, and one thing people say, there was an article in the Times a couple of weeks ago that said Trump is, they were examining the idea of Trump as a populist, somebody who represents the common man, the average man. And interestingly enough, it was right next to an article about El Chapo, whose name is, I forget, Jose or Juan Guzman, who is this famous, vicious, psychopathic, murdering head of a cartel, a drug cartel in Mexico, the largest cartel in Mexico and maybe the largest drug ring in the whole world, who recently just escaped from a Mexican federal prison. What a shock, right? And one of the things they said in both articles was they didn't compare the two of them, but it was interesting that one article was right next to the other one. Maybe that wasn't a mistake in placement by the New York Times. That a lot of common people, quote unquote, common people in Mexico, are rooting for El Chapo because he outwits the authorities, because a lot of the authorities in Mexico are venal and corrupt and, in the pay of the cartels, and because they don't provide anything like the services that people need there, and they take money and bribes on a lot of levels from people, and the police and the army are very often corrupt, and, like I say, the regular authorities are. The fact that this guy, this outlaw, a genuine outlaw named El Chapo, outwits the authorities, a lot of people that they interviewed in restaurants or bars or whoever they talked to, the man on the street in Mexico and the woman on the street, said, yeah, good for him, we're treated like dirt by these people, they are corrupt, and if he can get away with it, good for him. He's certainly not Robin Hood, and neither is Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is also portrayed or seen by some people as a populist. He speaks for the common man. Donald Trump speaks for the common man? Donald Trump is no outlaw. Donald Trump is no outlaw because he says things that nobody else will say, because he won't use political correctness, as he calls it. And that's an interesting phrase. I mean, he covers up a lot. He excuses a lot of his vulgarity and his sexism and his racism and his awful attitudes towards whole groups of people and to individual people by saying he has no time to be politically correct. I guess he also has no time to be decent or respectful. or to treat people like other people, like human beings. I mean, look at his TV show. You're fired. His whole personality is based on being a pig, to sound like Donald Trump. His whole personality is based on being disrespectful and unlikable and nasty and mean. And you could see that look on his face. He's got that, you know, I'm not the first one who's pointed this out, that mean, surly look on his face, that look of somebody who will, like, bite you or, you know, you would never turn your back on. But he's no populist. Donald Trump, far from being an outlaw or a populist, is actually, he was born rich. He was born very rich and just got richer. But along the way, of course, and we don't hear too much about this, I think one of the people on the Fox News thing pointed this out, that he's been bankrupt a couple of times, and it cost thousands of people their jobs, and it hurt a lot of people. Trump is no outlaw. He's no populist. He is a billionaire. He is part of the establishment. He is the establishment. And the fact that people don't see this is just because he speaks his mind and says what's on their mind, he expresses their fears, people make a mistake and think that he represents them. He doesn't. He has contempt for the common person. Just the way I'm sure this Mexican drug lord has contempt for the common person. Yeah, so they're both seen as populists, and people root for them, mostly because they are different. This guy El Chapo outwits corrupt authorities, so people are rooting for him. They don't not rooting for the fact that he's a drug dealer and a murderer. They're rooting for the fact that he's that he looks into the face of these people and spits at them. And they wish they could do it and get away with it. And Trump says things that other politicians won't say that are on people's minds. That's true. But Trump, a lot of people all over the country and the rest of the country, they don't really know how much people hate Trump in New York. Trump is seen as a bully in New York. His entrepreneurship and his building these gigantic, ugly, awful buildings all over the city, especially in one part of the city. He has destroyed entire neighborhoods where tens of thousands of people live by his overbuilding. He's like Godzilla running amok in Tokyo. He is, in New York, he is seen for what he is. He's a predatory capitalist, and he is really the working man's enemy. He's not representing the common man. He's a working man's enemy. But it doesn't take much in our culture for people to see somebody like this. And then mythology, you know, multiplies, and you get people like Jesse James. Jesse James is seen as, as an outlaw who was treated badly. Was it from Missouri, I think? Was treated badly by the union authorities and by the Pinkertons. And so, you know, and his family was maltreated, and he struck back. Apparently, Jesse James was a murdering, thieving killer when he was very young. Jesse James was always a bad criminal. But later on, the mythology grew. So the mythology is now among a lot of people that Trump speaks his mind. He represents me. He talks about the immigrants. He talks about even the rich. The idea that Donald Trump once upon a time was assaulting the rich. Donald Trump just says what he means. He just says what's on his mind all the time. But it doesn't mean that he represents anybody who is less than a billionaire. He's into spectacular shows that cater to the lowest common denominator, usually sexism in the American culture. His shows are all about meanness and sadism. And does Donald Trump think about it? Does Donald Trump really want to be president? And a couple of times he flirted with this idea before, and eventually he dropped out. I think maybe, is this the first time he's actually declared himself as a nominee that he's running? Donald Trump doesn't really want to be president, I don't think. I don't think that that's the main reason that he's doing what he's doing right now. Maybe he does want to be president, but any other manager, he would have to surround himself with people who knew what they were talking about. Donald Trump want to be president? I don't think he really does. I think what Donald Trump really wants, I mean, but did George Bush want to be president? I don't think he ever wanted to be president, and he really wasn't. He spent more than half his time at his ranch whacking weeds or whacking off whatever he was doing down on his ranch. He did not run the country. Dick Cheney and other people ran the country. Did Reagan really want to be president? To govern? Really, did they have like ideas that they felt like they could really change the country for the better? I don't think so. I don't know about Reagan so much, but definitely George Bush, you know, it was not something that was that he was interested in, was governing the country for the best and for the better. He was put up there, and he was, you know, he left it up to Cheney and all the rest of them to do it. I think what Donald Trump wants is he actually wants to be noticed. In New York City, Donald Trump puts this giant T, you know, gold and huge, you know, awful, you know, cheap gold letters on all his buildings. Trump Plaza, everything's got his name on it. Trump chocolate bars, Trump this, Trump that, Trump that. Trump is always trying to be noticed. That's the thing about Donald Trump. He wants to be noticed. He's like a child who was neglected. I don't know how he grew up. I really don't know. But he's like a child who was neglected. He's like a spoiled child, but in a funny way, not a spoiled child. He was obviously indulged in many ways when he was young. But maybe one thing he didn't get was something, and I can understand this. I mean, people could sympathize with this. One thing he didn't get was love. He didn't get regard. He didn't get positive, you know, all-embracing love from his parents. Well, how many people actually really do? I mean, he didn't. But he wants, just like a neglected baby, to be paid attention to. All the bad behavior and the bad words, all the caca doo-doo stuff that comes out of his mouth. He's like Howard Stern. He wants somebody to pay attention to him. That's why he's so grandiose. That's why he says such bad boy things all the time. He wants to have people's attention. He'll do anything to get attention. And he'll say anything to get attention. And the trouble with him is he doesn't know what he's saying from one day or from one week to the next. And he's mean-spirited. He's nasty. A lot of people want to get attention. A lot of people feel left out. And that's one reason why a lot of people support him or back him or are interested in what he says. They may not actually vote for him because they feel left out too. Most of us in America feel left out. Our government is a separate world in itself that runs us. We have nothing to do with what the government does anymore. Our vote, the only thing they care about is our vote once every 4 years or once every 2 years, and then we can go screw ourselves the rest of the time. They have contempt for us. They treat us like, you know, like children or like animals. You know, they spy on us. They take our taxes and start horrible wars all over the place. They torture people. They do anything that they feel like doing. And they don't give Americans their rights that they used to have. And people here feel left out. So anybody who even appears to speak for people who have been left out, it can actually seem almost heroic. And after all, it's a celebrity culture. And Donald Trump knows more about this than anybody else. People are famous for being famous. He is famous for, saying you're fired on TV, famous for running beauty pageants, famous for building giant buildings, for putting his name all over the place. But is he famous for any decent, good, or productive reason? No, he's not. Is he famous for anything he invented that helps people, or any philosophy he has that helps people, or any actions he's ever taken that help people? No, he's not. I mean, I sympathize with the man, but on the other hand, and, people often feel ignored and neglected, but they don't take it out on everybody and not in a position of power like he is to affect everybody. This is from the last paragraph in an article about him in the New York Times about the debate. But as Mr. Trump learned, when the show is not your own, it is difficult to control the outcome. Whenever the crowd or the moderators signaled disapproval, a pursed-lipped frown came over his face, and he seemed genuinely wounded. I don't think they like me very much, he said. And that's what Donald Trump is all about. He wants to be liked. He wants to be noticed. And he will say or do anything to have that happen. And he has an instinct for that. Anyhow, talk to you next week.
About a man that's sad and lonely. bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can never tell. The movie's gonna make